This meeting is now being recorded.
Good evening, and welcome to a special conference call with WWF Vice President for Climate and Energy, Lou Leonard. My name is Chris Connor. At WWF, I share stories of our work with our supporters in the media, and I'm part of the team here working with Lou as he's been preparing for the Paris Climate Talks, which will take place in just a couple of weeks. I'll be moderating our call today. But before we begin, I want to take a moment to thank you for your generous commitment to our work. Together, we are truly creating a brighter future for wildlife, people, and the planet. Like you, I'm excited to be here today to chat with Lou, but before we do, I just wanted to go over a few logistics. First, we'll begin with a short presentation from Lou that will last about 15 minutes, after which I'll open it up to you to ask your questions and join in the conversation. Until we reach our Q&A period, we're placing all lines in listen-only mode. At that time, I'll give you instructions for how to unmute your phone and ask your questions. This event is scheduled to last for about 30 minutes. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Lou. As Vice President for Climate Change and Energy, Lou is our organization's strategic leader in our efforts to fight climate change and prepare for its impacts. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Lou.
Of course, Chris. It's good to be with you, and hello, everybody. It's great to be with you as we ramp up towards Paris.
Lou, before we dive into what we hope to see come out of the talks in Paris, can you first just take a moment to step back and remind us why this is such an important moment for WWF and what role we will play in the negotiations?
That's a great place to start, Chris. So, every day I interact with different colleagues here in the WWF headquarters in Washington and also around the world. And as we've been heading towards Paris, more and more of them have been coming to me and talking to me about why with the work that we're doing in climate in general, but also on the way to Paris, really matters to their work, which is encouraging to me. It gives me that kind of extra boost to keep really working hard during this busy period. But for example, my friend Brad Ack, who heads our oceans team, has really been pressing on me, over the last few weeks about how important it is that we keep emissions down below 2 degrees, because if we're not able to do that, the level of carbon that's going to build up in our oceans is going to raise the acidity level of the oceans and really threaten the whole ocean food chain that Brad is working so hard on. And then Dave McLaughlin, who heads our food team, has shown me the most recent data about the yield on the big food crops around the world and how already two of the four major food staple crops are declining in yields as population is growing. So, as Dave has been telling me, the bread baskets of the world are going to shift, and the amount of food that we're able to produce is going to go down. So we really need to get ahead of this challenge. And then the last example that I'd like to bring, which is really heartbreaking, what's happening right now in Indonesia. Maybe some of you have read about it in the news, but so much of that country is on fire right now, but through a combination of a really strong El Nino year, but also the extra kind of drought and dryness that's in the country because of climate change. And it's basically has half of the remaining orangutan population on the planet at risk right now. So those are important reminders to me as I do this work that that this really affects all of the work that WWF does around the world. Chris, you also asked about the role that WWF plays at these talks, this is actually one of those really good news stories for me, one of the times that I'm proudest to work at WWF, because what's going to happen in Paris when I leave in about a week, actually a week from today, I'm going to leave on Thanksgiving evening after doing Thanksgiving with my family. I'm going to hop on a plane. When I get there, I'm going to be joined by colleagues from WWF offices around the world, my counterparts from China and India, all the countries of Europe, Brazil, Africa. It's really an amazing team. It's a kaleidoscope of the whole network and the world, really. And what's great about that is it allows us to work as one team and to really help. We're able to stand in the shoes of the governments. Here are governments from around the world trying to come up with a deal with their own national considerations in mind, and sometimes they get stuck. And what we have is we have people that are able to understand all of those contexts and come up with solutions and get them out to all the governments. It's really an impressive operation, actually.
I know you guys are looking forward to it. And I think, WWF will have over 100 people on the ground, and we're really trying to make sure the talks end up in the right place.
So, at those talks, we're going to have more than 180 nations are going to be at the table trying to figure out a path forward. What's your insight? Are they going to be able to reach a meaningful agreement? We've tried this in the past. What's going to make it different this time in Paris?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question, and it's a question that we had to ask ourselves really seriously a couple years ago when we decided to put a lot of effort and attention into these negotiations, and we've been preparing for these talks in Paris for the last 4 years. What we've already seen and what we knew and we were hoping and it's turned out to be the case is a moment like the negotiations in Paris really mean so much more than what happens during those 2 weeks. When you have a moment like this, it creates this, it creates this period, actually. And in the case of Paris, it's probably been about the last 12 to 18 months that have been really influenced by the fact that all these governments were going to be coming to Paris. And we've seen a set of, kind of one new decision and new action after another that we know was at least partially driven by the fact that the Paris talks were sitting there at the end of 2015. So, for example, you've seen over 150 countries put new climate targets, national climate targets on the table to reduce emissions. You saw over $10 billion pledged to the Green Climate Fund to help save forests and protect communities and ecosystems around the world. Just on Tuesday, actually, this stuff keeps coming right up until the very end. Just Tuesday, the OECD countries, which are sort of basically all of the major industrialized countries in the world, just pledged to phase out public subsidies for coal plants around the world. So it's this period, this road to Paris, as well as Paris itself, which has really produced such an impact. Now, what about Paris itself? Well, those 150 targets that I mentioned, they've gotten us about halfway to where we need to be to get on track to keep warming below 2 degrees, which is basically, the science tells us 1.5 degrees, 2 degrees, somewhere in that range has really got to be the upper limit of what we what we can tolerate, what our ecosystems can tolerate, and the communities and critters that rely on them. So we're about halfway there with what we already have on the table. So what I'm looking for in Paris and what I think is achievable is for countries to come together and create a plan for what to do about that other half. And there's a lot of really good and interesting ideas on the table. Including doing more cooperation among countries, because if you look at those 150 targets, it's basically countries saying, this is what I can do at home by myself. So really what I'm looking for in Paris is for countries to come together and say, okay, I can do this much by myself, but working together with, one, two, or three, or multiple other countries, we can go even further. And I think that's what we need to see in Paris.
So once we're through Paris, and we're going to see a lot of good action there, what does it mean for WWF's work moving forward? How are we going to build on the momentum that we're going to see in Paris? What are the next steps we're going to do? What's going to happen next?
Yeah, where I was talking just a second ago about the road to Paris, and over the last several months, we've really been talking about the road through Paris so that we make sure we have our eye on what happens coming out of the negotiations because, as I said, basically, Paris is going to get us to a certain, way down the road and really a significant way, kind of compared to where we were, before the Paris moments were created. But we're not going to be there yet. And that's why this plan that we have to create in Paris needs to be one that then all of us get behind for the months, and in fact years after Paris for us to really start bringing down those emissions and preparing for the impacts of climate change that we can't avoid that are coming. So in the case of WWF, we've really been structuring and looking at our climate strategy and really all of our strategies for our new 6 goals around this idea of this gap. And what can we do to contribute through partnerships with our business partners, through work with cities throughout the United States, and work that we can help the U.S. government do in cooperation with other countries going forward. So, for example, the President of the United States created a new partnership with the government of Indonesia, the government of Mexico, the government of Brazil over the last year, and what we want to do is we want to see those partnerships really start to deliver impact on the ground to help ensure that we're reducing deforestation in the Amazon, to help the government of India really scale up additional renewable energy, and as I said before about Indonesia, really to develop a plan to make sure that those big fires and the management of palm oil and other other activities in Indonesia really starts cutting back on deforestation and ultimately really eliminating deforestation from those countries. So I think that we're, as an organization that is in 100 countries, WWF is in many ways uniquely positioned to be able to advance an agenda like this that is about impact in a big, important country like the United States, but also working across national borders in all these other countries that really matter to the climate challenge, whether it's China, India, Brazil, Indonesia, South Africa, Mexico. In order to solve this global problem, we have to be working across borders and on these solutions where we get more out of cooperation. And we're able to do that because we're in so many of these places.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, and you mentioned it about being, a global movement in a global time. I mean, one last question before we want to take some calls from our guests today. Last Friday, we saw some devastating events in Paris. I think a lot of folks are still working to kind of get through that. I mean, how might that change things that we're seeing coming up at the talks? And, does it cast a whole new light on the way we see Paris?
Well, I mean, I'm one of those people that's still grappling with what happened, for sure. I was here in the office on Friday, and we were preparing for a big set of meetings that we have this week. In fact, tomorrow, I'm going over with Carter to meet with Secretary Kerry to really push on the final U.S. plan on the road, heading into Paris. So we were working really hard. I was here late, and I remember, one of my colleagues, Nikki Sunt, coming into my office and basically saying, "Have you heard what happened in Paris?" And the whole weekend, and even till now, it's still really affecting me. For a while there, I wasn't sure whether our colleagues in WWF colleagues in Paris were okay. We have heard from all of them; everybody is fine, which is, of course, important. But there's been so much more devastation there, and really the whole tenor of France and Europe and really the world has changed. So, I think this can't help but have an impact. We just heard today that the French government has basically canceled the big rallies that civil society had planned. We had one planned for the day before the talks start, and we had another one planned for the day that they after they finished, as a way to say, we're still here and we're, kind of really pushing coming out of Paris. So those will not be happening. We're working with our other colleagues with other organizations in civil society, especially the ones in France, to figure out how else to get our voice heard. And one of the things that you're probably going to hear more about is this idea of solidarity marches around the world. There already were many of those planned, 50, 60 of those planned around the world. I think there's going to be more attention on those and this idea of, kind of marching for us in Paris because we can't, but really marching for all of us and the future that we need. I think that the last thing I'll say about that is I do think it's encouraging that governments, even in the face of this tragedy and the real significant security considerations that the government has to face, the talks are going to go on. Not only that, but the 120 heads of state, including President Obama, that were planning to come are still planning to come on that first day. And I think that's a signal that the world, world leaders are sending to us that this is a top priority for all of them, and it should be for us. And I think it's also an important reminder of the importance of diplomacy. This is an area where governments are able to sit down together, all of them, and work out some of the hardest issues that any governments have ever tried to work out in the history of planet Earth, to be honest. We're talking about transitioning the entire global economy, and they're able to do it. Diplomacy works in this context, and I think that's an important message right now.
No, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it's definitely – everything is kind of really ramping up over the next few weeks. I think it's a great way to look at it. Well, we've reached a point in tonight's call where we want to actually take some calls from our questions from the phone. For those on the phone to ask a question, please press *6 to unmute your phone, and please give us your name and where you're calling from before asking your question. As folks are queuing up, I want to take one moment, and we'll actually take a question we got in advance from one of our friends on email. Mark from Cleveland actually had a question about the role that the U.S. is playing and what have they done in the lead-up to Paris that's really set the stage for delivering a strong deal.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's actually something that I neglected to mention during my earlier answers to some of the other questions. The United States, through the administration, President Obama, Secretary Kerry, they've really stepped up over the last couple of years. I haven't always, you know, over the last, you know, 6-7 years of the administration, I have not always been, you know, satisfied or pleased with the level of attention that the administration has given to climate change. But for goodness sakes, over the last 2 years and especially the last year, that has changed. 1 year ago, almost to the week, actually, the administration announced this deal with China to have both countries say, we're going to put these new targets on the table. We're going to do it together. That took a ton of diplomatic effort behind the scenes that, you know, that we have been hearing about for a long time. So that's just one example. Of course, you know, the president has been doing more and more to implement climate action in the U.S. through regulations on new coal-fired power plants, regulations to increase the fuel efficiency of our cars, make our appliances more efficient. And what I've seen is that by doing that at home, the U.S. has bought itself credibility internationally in the talks. When I first started at WWF 7 years ago, the United States of America had very little credibility globally on this issue, and for that reason, we just were not a major player, other than a, you know, target for people's you know, disappointment. And that has changed. The administration has clearly made this a priority for themselves, for the legacy of the president, and it's made a difference for sure.
It's great to know. Well, again, if anyone on our call has any questions, please press *6 to unmute your phone. And please give us your name and where you're calling from before you ask your question. We'll open the lines now. Any questions?
Yes, I have a question. It's Maynard Davis calling from Charlottesville, Virginia, and I'm interested in this team of 100-plus WWF staff members at Paris and how a little bit of a detail of how that's all going to be coordinated. You've got, obviously, the big players there. How is that team going to be coordinated and monitored through the 2 weeks and managed?
It's a great question, and it is a, you know, it's a real zoo there. I have to tell you, there's going to be 50,000 people coming to the conference. About half of them are credentialed on the inside of the talks, including you know, about 40 of us from WWF, and you really need to be well. You need to be, you know, you need to have a plan. You need to make sure that you're well organized, or you're just going to get yourself lost, and you're not going to have the impact you need to. So I can tell you that. Let me just run you through a day in the life, if you will, right? So, you know, get up maybe about somewhere between 5:30. We'll, you know, we'll have breakfast at the hotel where we're staying, and then we'll go as a group to the venue, and then we'll have a morning meeting at about 7 a.m. And what we'll do is we'll have made out our plan for the day of the things that we want to make sure we're accomplishing today based on what's happening in the talks, what kind of meetings are happening, what issues are up, and then we have leads for each of the big issues in the talks. So someone who a friend from WWF Japan leads our work on climate mitigation, so he's following those sets of issues. My colleague from WWF Nepal heads our climate adaptation effort, so he'll give a report on what's going on those issues for the day. That's, you know, just a couple of examples. And then we'll give out assignments to cover the key meetings that are happening that day. This is one of the more transparent, it might be the most transparent international negotiation in the world, in the history of the world. We get to be in the rooms in most of the meetings, so we'll sit in the back. We can hear what's going on, and then we can coordinate with each other. If I'm in a room and I'm listening to, a debate over a certain topic and somebody from, the delegate from China gets up and says something that sounds significant to me, I can quickly send a text message or an email to my counterpart from WF China who's here with us, but maybe he's covering another meeting. And then he can, kind of write back to me and say, oh, that's something new. I'll make sure to follow up with them, after the meeting that I'm in. And that way we really are able to track what's happening day to day, and we're able to keep in touch with the delegations in real time, the government delegations in real time, which then allows us to really, figure out where the problems are, and come up with, some creative ideas to help the government sort of get around the challenges that they might be facing. And then at the end of the night, we have an evening meeting at 7 o'clock every night, and then we'll usually go out to dinner and kind of do the work that we need to do during the overnight to be ready for the next day. So it's definitely these are full days, but we're very well coordinated, and it's really an impressive operation, I have to tell you.
Thanks, Lou. Any other questions out that we have on the line today? Again, please press *6 to unmute your phone to ask your question. Okay, while we're waiting for the next one, I've got one more for you, Lou. There's some folks here in Washington, they've really been opposing any deal in Paris. I mean, we've heard a lot about that. I mean, does President Obama have the ability to deliver us a meaningful agreement?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a question that I get from many of my international colleagues, both within WWF, but also from other governments. And actually, an important role that WWF in the U.S. plays in the international context is to be able to answer some of these questions for people around the world. So, the short answer is yes. And here's the reason why. So, what the administration's been very careful to do is to design the promises that it makes to reduce emissions and to deliver on other promises within the agreement, two things that it already has the legal authority to do. So as I mentioned before, the new regulations on automobiles and power plants, these are all things where the administration has authority under the existing laws like the Clean Air Act. So what the U.S. will be promising internationally will largely be things that the executive branch already has the authority to do, and in many cases is already doing. So I think that is what will allow the things that end up in that agreement to be things that the U.S. can really live up to. I think one of the places where the U.S. has to do a little bit more, and where these tough Washington politics that you mentioned come into play, is regarding support for poorer countries, basically things like saving their forests, protecting ecosystems in the face of climate change, those kind of funds for the Green Climate Fund and other support. That's where the Congress really comes into the game, and where the administration is really in a much weaker position. So that's why a couple weeks ago some of the folks on the call may have received this, but we sent an emergency email out to a number of, most of our big supporters, and basically said, there are deceptive votes in the Congress right now to defund the Green Climate Fund. Can you write to your member of Congress and say, look, this is really important. It's important for climate change. It's important for saving forests. We want to see, Congress do the right thing here. So I think it's a place where we really rely on our members to give us some extra influence and ability to shape an outcome in Paris like that.
Excellent. Well, I think we have time for one more call from our phones. Again, if anyone has any questions, please press *6 to unmute your phone, and please give us your name and where you're calling from before you ask your question. Well, we may not have anybody in the queue. So we actually have one more question that actually came into us before the call by email. And Michelle in Walnut Creek, California, wanted to get your take on the next few years of climate action. I mean, we see Paris has been this pivotal moment. You mentioned it earlier, talking about it being the road through Paris.
Yeah.
I mean, what's next?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that what's going to happen in Paris is we're going to set ourselves up with a set of to-dos, basically. Everybody's going to leave the Paris talks with things that they need to go home and do, whether it's the governments, it's the businesses that are going to come and pledge new action that they need to then go home and actually implement. And, you know, through the WWF program of Climate Savers and other partnerships that we have with companies, we're going to help them do that. Whether it's the mayors that are coming to Paris, WWF actually, together with the National League of Cities, is bringing 15 mayors to Paris from all over the United States and to basically show the action that they're taking and to highlight pledges that they've made to do even more. So when we come home, we're going to work with those mayors to get the job done at home at the city level, and really to help explain to folks what happened in Paris. So I think we're helping to both bring the action that needs to happen on the ground coming out of Paris, but also really helping people understand why it mattered and how we really need everybody to be part of this solution coming out of Paris from the from folks switching to, green energy at home or really watching the products that you make to make sure that they're FSC certified and they're, basically limiting their environmental and climate footprint to the companies that we work with, the cities. And then, as I said, a big part of the international agenda, I think, coming out of Paris is going to be bilateral efforts between countries like the United States and the other big emitters like India, South Africa, Brazil, Indonesia, to really develop plans to go even further to reduce more emissions, to save more forests, and to really help close that gap that I mentioned where, we got to get from halfway there to all the way there. And that gap is going to be the lodestar that guides us in our work at WWF. And hopefully after Paris, it will become the challenge that we all take on and make the guiding force for the work that we're going to do coming out of Paris. We have no choice. We have to do it. The good news is that change is here. It's happening. We just have to accelerate it. We have to make sure things happen more quickly than they have so far. And I think Paris will help give us that push.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you, Lou. I think we're going to have to end it there this evening. We've come up on time for a call, but I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this evening. In the next week, we'll be sending you a follow-up email with a link to a recording of today's call, along with a survey asking for your feedback on both the technology and the content of the presentation. So please, share what you've learned with us with your family and friends, and please take the time to fill out the survey because we truly value your opinion. If you have any more questions, please drop us a line at calls@wwfus.org or give us a shout at 202-495-4315. Again, thank you very much for taking your time to join us tonight, and Godspeed in Paris, Lou.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.